Continuing on the topic of Canto 10, Chapter 11. And I'll tell you what the verse number is in just a moment. So, text number 58, 10, 11, 58. So I think I'll just begin reading. This verse is being referred to in Jiva Goswami's Krishna Sandarbha, and Krishna Sandarbha is the fourth of the Sandarbhas. It follows Bhagavat Sandarbha, describing the position of Bhagavan in general, and then specifically Krishna is the original Swayam Bhagavan. So here's the translation of this particular section of Krishna Sandarbha. If Prahlad Maharaj and other great devotees who have completely surrendered to the Supreme Lord may remain in family life, apparently attached to family and home, then why should anyone think that simply because the residents of Vrindavan are householders and not renounced sannyasis, therefore they cannot be eternal associates of the Lord? The residents of Vrindavan are eternally dear to Lord Krishna, and they are perfectly situated in the highest platform of spiritual happiness, free from all contact of the material energy. This is described in the following statement of Shukadeva Goswami, 10.11.58. That's our verses from chapter 11, where it says, in this way, all the cowherd men headed by Nanda Maharaj enjoyed topics about the pastimes of Krishna and Balaram with great transcendental pleasure, and they could not even perceive material tribulations. So the context is, Krishna's come back after a day of taking care of the cows, and during the latter part of that, this particular day, he had this encounter with Bakasura, and he did what he did with Bakasura. And the cowherd boys, when they saw Krishna in the mouth of the Baka demon, they fainted out of attachment for Krishna. Balaram fainted out of attachment for Krishna, although he's omniscient and all-powerful. The attachment for Krishna is so strong. And then when Krishna made his body as hot as fire, Baka couldn't take it, so he spit him out and then tried to catch him with his beak, so Krishna bifurcated his beak. And then the cowherd boys, yay! And they gathered up the cows because the cows were terrified seeing their beloved Krishna in danger. So they gathered up the cows, they went back, and when they went back, they told their families, well, wait, we tell you what Krishna did today. And so the cowherd men are talking about Krishna and what he did that day and so forth and so on. They're enjoying, who is he? And he must be so much filled with piety, the Supreme Lord protected him, and our King Nanda Maharaj, he's the emblem of virtue, and he must be protected. the son must be protected by his piety, and and on and on and on and on. So they're enjoying so much that even they're in the midst of a near-death experience with Krishna, they're not even feeling any material tribulation. Their concern is an ecstasy, is the point. So again, Jiva Goswami touches on this same question. Quote, it is seen that they have attachment like other humans. How then can they be eternal associates? Same question, just asked in a different way. This is answered by Kaimutya. Kaimutya is a term that's used in Nyaya, and it goes like this. Kaimutya Nyaya is that in which if one thing is said, the other is accepted without saying. And it gives the example. If I have 10 fruits, I have fruits. It goes without saying. This is the Kaimutya analogy. Another example, it's a little more elevated, but only Nishkam Bhakti of Vishnu brings Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, whereas worship of demigods does not. So it's inclusive in that sense. So it's not in Nishkam Bhakti, so it doesn't. It's implied without saying it. So, now this is a reference to Canto 10, Chapter 14. This is Brahma's prayers after the Brahma Vimohan Lila. Oh, Krishna, until people become your devotees, their material attachments and desires remain thieves. Their homes remain prisons, and their affectionate feeling for their family members remain foot shackles. That's this Kaimutya. But so they're the Vrijvasis, they're free from those things, and so they're free from those things. Their soul absorption is in Krishna, so they're free from the tribulations of material affinity. Stena, referring to this verse of Brahma, stena means a person who steals others' wealth. The attachment and other material propensities found in material persons are thieves, as long as these persons do not completely offer themselves to you. Yavat na te jana. When they offer themselves to you, their attachment becomes fixed in you. Since that attachment is not material, it is not thievery, but a form of the highest bliss. Thus, Prahlad prays, quote from Vishnu Purana, by the way, with remembrance of you, may the attraction for you in my heart, which for the foolish is absorbed in material objects, never leave my heart. If sadhakas are of this nature, what can be said of the eternal attachment of inhabitants of Gokula, since they have such strong affection for Krishna? Thus it is said, this is this text 58, in this way all the cowherd men headed by Nanda Maharaj, enjoyed topics about the pastimes of Krishna and Balaram and played with them. They never perceived material tribulations. So this verse has a lot of commentary where, here's some for examples. For example, when the cowherd boys went out to herding the cows, one morning they came to Krishna, were completely hungry. Forget the adjective that's used. Famished. So, That sounds like tribulation. The commentary says that feeling is not a material tribulation. That feeling is aroused by Krishna to facilitate a pastime. It's lila shakti. It's not maya. It's not material tribulation. So when they feel intense feelings, they have intense feelings, but it's not material tribulation feelings. Krishna nearly died. The coward boys and Balaram fainted. The elders, when they heard, they're very protective of children, naturally so. What to speak of protective of Krishna? So whatever feelings they were feeling, the coward boys and Balaram, and it's not material tribulation. It's not. That's the teaching. And further, bhava means, no, excuse me, bhava, not bhava, bhava means material world, like the tribulations of material world, that in which they exist, bhavanti. Though they appear among material persons, they do not have knowledge of material suffering, vedanam, related to the material world. According to the dictionary, vedana means knowledge and suffering. Here is Jiva Goswami in his Brahma Samhita commentary, similar. In either the spiritual or material worlds, no devotees are said to be greater devotees than the people of Braja. That the people of Braja are the dear friends and relatives are described in these words of Lord Krishna. Quote, "The people of Braja are my friends. They have taken shelter of me, and they consider me their Lord and Master. I will now protect them with my mystic power. I vow that I will rescue them." In this verse, the word etasmin loke means in this material world. And ucha vacha means engaged in ignorant materialistic activities. The conditioned souls rotate in various species of life, becoming sometimes a demigod and sometimes an animal. So this is a description of after Varuna was visited by Krishna and rescued Nanda from that place and brought them back. Then the cowherds were talking about what happened. And they start to speculate. But it's a good kind of speculation. Maybe he's the personality of Godhead. And if he is, maybe he'll show us his eternal abode. Because we are conditioned souls rotating lifetime after lifetime, higher species down to lower species. That's what the reference is. And svam gatim brahman means overcome by ignorance, they do not understand the existence of the spiritual world. This is Krishna reflecting on their thoughts. This means, quote, because they have no knowledge of my transcendental pastimes in this world, they remain in ignorance. Knowledge of Lord Krishna's pastimes in this world frees one from the bonds of material ignorance. This is described in our verse 58. In this way, all the cowherd men headed by Nanda Maharaj enjoyed topics about the pastimes of Krishna and Balaram with great transcendental pleasure, and they could not even perceive material tribulations. From this statement of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, we can understand, this is Jiva Goswami writing in Brahma Samhita commentary, that the Lord's pastimes in this world are completely unlike the ignorant materialistic activities of the conditioned souls. The words svam Loka means the Goloka planet that the Lord revealed to the Gopas. Because of the manifestation of the Lord's personal transcendental potency, the Goloka planet is Tamasa Param, above the darkness of the material world. So they didn't ask Krishna, can you show us your abode? They just were talking amongst themselves, and Krishna remotely, he knew. And so he decided, they're my dear devotees, let me show them. Like, you know, a child may want to see something. You hold the child up so they can see something. So on an auspicious day, he took them to a certain place, who accompanied them, not exactly took them, to a certain place where they could bathe in the river Jamuna, and it happened to be the same place that Akura had gone and saw what he saw on his way to Mathura. So the verse describes, this is, forget which chapter, Krishna had them immerse in the Jamuna River. They were lifted up out of the Jamuna River, and then he showed them Goloka. He showed his own form in Goloka, being offered prayers by the personified Vedas, and they saw themselves in that same Goloka. They're looking at themselves. That must have been pretty far out. And they thought, how fortunate and how wonderful is Krishna. But they didn't lose it. Their love for Krishna was so strong. By Yogamaya, the curtain was closed and they forgot everything. Another reference, Jiva Goswami again, text 5 of Brahma Samhita. Those early verses in Brahma Samhita are describing Goloka. So commentary says, he's translating a verse from chapter 28. This is the same section, the darshan of the spiritual world. My own dearest people, Janaha, the inhabitants of Braja, thinking that they are wandering in this world, etasmin loke, in various destinations such as devatas, animals, etc., by their own ignorance, do not know their real abode. Janaha means my people, the residents of Braja, standing for Sva Jana, my devotees. Though Jana can also mean people in general, it is inappropriate in this context. Krishna thinks of all the people of Braja as his own people. Again, from that same, no, it's an earlier chapter, chapter 25. I must therefore protect the cowherd community by my transcendental potency. This is the Govardhan Lila. Indra's doing the Indra and Krishna's contemplating. I must therefore protect the cowherd community by my transcendental potency, for I am their shelter, I am their master, and indeed, they are my own family. After all, I have taken a vow to protect my devotees. These devotees, Janaha, are bewildered in high or low bodies of devas or animals concerning their destination, svam gatim, in this material world, etasmin. They think that their destination is the impersonal Brahman, since they play the role of contaminated souls. They do not know their real good. This is because for the pastimes of Krishna in the material world, part of their awareness is covered. This is understood from the following statement. Again, this is text 58. In this way, all the cowherd men, headed by Nanda Maharaj, enjoyed topics about the pastimes of Krishna and Balaram with great transcendental pleasure, and they could not even perceive material tribulations. From this statement, it is understood that the inhabitants of Vraja could not actually be afflicted by the activities of lust due to ignorance. And then a similar reference, again it's Jiva Goswami, this is now from Gopal Champu. It reads, Jiva Goswami's writing, recognizing all these people, both as relatives and others, as non-different from himself, he began to contemplate, attracted to them by his mercy and quickly falling under their control. Ah, all these are my own people. They are now thinking of me as the Supreme Lord and desire to experience my greatness, which cannot be fully experienced. But they cannot experience this since they become astonished only by the powers of Varuna. They cannot realize my real greatness since it is similar to what they have already known. They have lost their discrimination and thus consider their and my appearance in this world to be a mundane appearance, which gives destinations for the jivas through their ignorance, lust, and karma. In this way, all the cowherd men, headed by Nanda Maharaj, enjoyed topics about the pastimes of Krishna and Balaram with great and transcendental pleasure, and they could not even perceive material tribulations. They had offered everything to Krishna, their very selves, their families, their wealth, wives, and all pleasures. That's a translation of a verse from text from chapter 16. And then another from chapter 65. Those cowherds have dedicated everything to lotus-eyed Krishna. Here's another reference. It's again, it's Gopal Champu, but it's a different part of Gopal Champu. Krishna returns to Braja. Chapter 29. When Krishna appears on earth, the cowherds cannot see that planet. Thus they seem to be ignorant. Jano, vai. The word jana refers to the devotee, as in the verse, this is Canto 3, Chapter 29, this is the Kapila section of devotional service. Devotees, janaha, do not accept any kind of liberation, salokya, sharshti, samipya, sarupya, or ekatva, even though they are offered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And again, this is this chapter 25, Govardhan Lila. I must therefore protect the cowherd community by my transcendental potency, for I am their shelter, I am their master. Indeed, they are my own family. After all, I've taken a vow to protect my devotees. In his mind, Krishna spoke this way because of his strong faith in his people. This clearly shows that the people of Vraja were his most intimate friends. If the word jana referred to ordinary people, then his mercy, that is showing Goloka, would have been spread to all people. This would also not agree with the words of Swam Gatim, their own abode. Thus, my own people, the greatest devotees, are bewildered in this material world by my power of ignorance and wander about in different forms. They think that they are ultimately impersonal in form and do not know their abode known as Goloka. That is described as follows. Here's our verse again. In this way, all the cowherd men headed by Nanda Maharaj enjoyed topics about the pastimes of Krishna and Balaram with great transcendental pleasure, and they could not even perceive material tribulations. This means my lila shakti, which makes them think they are material, produces this effect. Because of that ignorance, Nanda was astonished at seeing Varuna's abode. This is how to understand the statement that he showed them his abode and later gave it to them. I'll make some comments shortly. One more section. This is Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Makes reference to this Krishna's vow, chapter 25, Govardhan Lila, protecting everybody. The meaning of the verse is, therefore, my dearest people, Janaha, the inhabitants of Braja, thinking that they are wandering in this world, etasmin loke, to various destinations such as devatas, animals, etc., by their ignorance, that's this lila shakti, oblivious of Atma, do not know the real abode, which I will thus show them. In other words, their so-called, quote, ignorance is caused by absorption in Krishna's human-like pastimes, lila shakti. The inhabitants of Braja identify themselves as ordinary people. This is illustrated in the following. The same. They don't have any material tribulations. Our philosophy, the sufferings of this world and coming to the position of no sufferings, there's the impersonal and false understanding of that. That is, you know, give things up. You know this verse, Rupa Goswami's, the two companion verses of detachment. Anasaktasya vishayan yartaham upayunditaha nirbandha krishna sambande yuktam vairagya. This is Lord Chaitanya's teachings. Detachment comes from yukta vairagya. The false vairagya is things that are in relation to Krishna, hari sambandha vastuna, you give them up. So we're sadhakas, we're not vrijvasis. But the Brijvasis, they have only one attachment. So anasaktasya, without attachment, comes from attachment to Krishna. So without attachment to material enjoyment, they do what they do. And in sadhana stage, we're supposed to be learning the art of doing what we do without the intention of sense gratification. That's the material forgetfulness of Krishna program, sense gratification. It's the material position, being enjoyers of the temporary through the senses. There's the temporary, here's my senses, let me enjoy. And that's the material program. And it covers one with illusion. So how do you get free from that illusion? Or how do you experience real happiness? So one, the impersonal idea is you give that stuff up. And the spiritual idea is you engage that stuff, but in such a way that it's not with vishaya or sense enjoyment. If it's not with sense enjoyment, then what is it? It's Krishna's pleasure. Accept things. Since this is connecting with our topic this morning, if you remember. The topic this morning was gona bhakti, or subsidiary activities. Now, if you're Nanda Maharaj, or you're a Vrijvasi in Krishna's eternal pastimes, they have all kinds of things of this world that they do. Just take, you know, taking care of the cows, or having a family or having a home or having paraphernalia. There's no attachment to those things. To have those things, specifically it says, those that are not Krishna's mother, Yashoda's Krishna's mother, but those other ladies, they would keep their homes impeccable because they thought of their home as Krishna's home, even though he's not their son. Their attachment for Krishna is so powerful. So supposing you're not Mother Yashoda or Nanda Maharaj and you're in Vrindavan, you have that same attachment for Krishna as if, you know, in the same mood, of the parental affection mood. It's so strong, so strong. Or your friend, you like to, you know, boys like to play. So, but it's just for the pleasure of Krishna. That's all. That's all. It's a different kind of activity. So for those that aren't in that Vrijbasi mood, then there's practice. And the practice is Yukta Vairagya. Or as the discussion was this morning, Gona Dharma, Gona Bhakti. They're subsidiary. You don't trash them. They're helpful. So you don't trash things that are helpful. But there can be a risk when you're using something that's helpful, because you may become attached to be the enjoyer of that thing and forget the, you know, the higher purpose. So it's another way of saying the same thing as Rupa Goswami's teaching in Nectar of Instruction. To become too much attached to rules and regulations, or be unattached to rules and regulations and disregard them. Too much attached means without understanding the purpose behind them. Right? So what's the purpose behind them? And doing or not doing, what's the purpose behind doing or not doing? And that's the primary. And then there's subsidiary. So all this we've been reading, that there may be persons, apparently there were persons during Jiva Goswami's time that criticized, how can you hold the Vrijbasis in such high regard? Because they had families and they were, you know, they had paraphernalia and they did things of this world. So how you can say they're eternal associates? Come on. Apparently there were people like that. But that they're as Krishna's activities are not material, their activities are not material because of their attachment to Krishna. And the purpose behind the regulations of the Vedic culture is to achieve that attachment to Krishna. They were already there. And they lived their life that way. And we appreciate not only their lifestyle, but we appreciate how attached to Krishna they were. And because of that, they can do anything. They can dance, they can sing, they can have a party, they can have festivals that are the way that religious people have festivals, but not like religious people that have festivals. Religious people that have festivals have their what's in it for me consciousness, commonly. Practically universally. It's not that we stay away from religious festivals. We want to observe them with the recognition of what's the purpose behind them. And one who has achieved, one who has understood the purpose behind them, they're liberated. They're already liberated. I found it particularly fascinating that the pastime where Nanda Maharaj is being swallowed by the serpent, the occasion was, it was Shivaratri. And the whole cowherd community and the boys went to a temple of Lord Shiva in Uma. They had a 3-day Shivaratri festival. Now we don't do that in ISKCON. Or Navaratri, or, you know, we it's on our calendar, but we don't have a big festival. And one of the reasons we don't have a big festival is that the mindset could go to the material side. we honor Lord Shiva in a certain way, but we don't honor, they had a Shivaratri festival. But they were seeing him in a way that, unless you're a bridge boss, you don't see. or like Prabhupada's, from Nectar of Devotion, there's 64 items, and when devotees started reading Prabhupada's book, they came across one of those 64 as worship of Ganesh. And so they asked innocently, Prabhupada, why didn't you teach us this one? It's right in Rupa Goswami's teachings. Why didn't you teach us? Explain to us how to. And he said, if I gave you the how to, you would worship Ganesh with the idea of fulfilling your material desires and getting rid of obstacles, and you become entangled. So I didn't. But I happened to note in one of the early biographies about Lord Chaitanya's life, I forget who the author is. It's not Vrindavan Das Thakur, but another one of the early biographers of Lord Chaitanya. In the very, very beginning, first five verses, is a prayer to Ganesh. Now, persons on the platform of pure bhakti, their approach to Ganesh is not, to get rid of the obstacles for their material enjoyment. It's the prototype from which the Ganesh, that's Lord Shiva's son, comes. That kind of idea. Or like the gopis worshipping Katyayani. It's the internal potency Katyayani, not the demigoddess Katyayani. So when the Vrijbasis, they're cultured people, and when they would observe something of culture, they would do it in the transcendental sense. We had this nice discussion about, it was well known in Vrindavan that Radharani's, that Nanda Maharaja's worshipable deity was Narayana, and Radharani's worshipable deity was the sun god. She regularly went to Suryakund to do worship of the sun god. But she wasn't just worshiping the sun god like worldly people, like say Satrajit worshiped the sun god. Because he wanted material stuff. And the sun god, knowing the material stuff that he wanted, came and gave him his material stuff. But so Radharani didn't want material stuff. She didn't worship that aspect of the sun god. Because demigods can only give material stuff. So she was worshiping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the presiding deity of the sun. Not just Surya, but Surya Narayan, the worshipable deity of Surya. And a very interesting event takes place in Rupa Goswami's explanation of the gopis that wanted Krishna as their husband. There's this really involved, complex narration of how the gopis became queens in Dwarka, including Radharani. Have you heard that description? It's very complicated, but a scene opens where the gopis are going mad. Krishna has gone. And Radharani's chief mad amongst the mad gopis, and she decides to give up her life, something like that, and plunges goes running full speed into the river Jamuna and disappears. And doesn't come out. Something like Nanda Maharaj, when he was taking his bath for the Dwadasi day, he just disappeared. And the cowherd men on the shore waited and he didn't come back. So then they called out. So the Rupa Goswami's writing says the sun god descended and took her to his abode for safety. And then later placed her in Dwarka. It's a long description. But so Radha became Satyabhama, or her expansion, however you want to describe it. A question came just this morning. It's not exactly on topic, but a devotee, Surabhi in China, asked, since Radharani is Krishna's Ladini Shakti, which Shakti is Chandravali? Because Chandravali became Rukmini and Radharani became Satyabhama. So which, if Radha is Krishna's Ladini Shakti, who is Chandravali? So I did some research. It's very simple. Radha expands into all the gopis. And one of those expansions, important expansions, is Chandravali. But Chandravali, two things. She doesn't have the fullness of the Mahabhav of Radha. And she's there to assist Radha and Krishna's love by providing opposition in service. And so that's her mood, is opposition. So she's got her group, you know, the right wing, left wing, gopis, and in competition, and you know, sassy talk back and forth, and all those things. It's just, she's an expansion of Radha's Ladini Shakti. That's the Shakti category that is Chandravali. So it's like there's all these mysteries all over the place in Krishna's pastimes. But so back to the topic. The theism in our position is secondary, following the primary. You know, like Krishna's words, the last instruction of Bhagavad Gita, sarva-dharmam parityaja, doesn't mean, you know, trash being religious. It just means those are secondary to the, it's supportive of the primary. And they get strength by the primary, not otherwise. Otherwise, being theistic without connecting with Krishna, knowing Krishna, it's incomplete. Or say it's stronger, it's a waste of time from transcendental perspective. So we do things that are in the secondary position, and the Brijvasis, they have no secondary position, no secondary dharma. It's only one thing. Till we get to that one thing, we do the secondary things with the primary thing in view. There's Bhadri Narayan Swami. Some of you know him. You know of him, at least. He's a GBC in San Diego, in the, you know, Southwest USA. So there's another godbrother of his and mine that I've not had much association with, but he was, for years and years, he was the Bhakta leader in San Diego, and then marriage, and then children, and then he had to have some occupation. So he became a pujari priest. And one of the things that, this is Bhadri Narayan Swami explaining to me, he does Shivaratri in such a way that he makes it really clear why we're worshipping Lord Shiva, why Vaishnava we may worship Lord Shiva. It's like abundantly clear. And apparently people like it. I mean, some people may be offended, I don't know, but because he's just giving that, you know, Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu, you know, in full 3D depiction. So it's very, very clear. He's not a Brijbasi, but he's giving, you know, the same spirit and essence as the Brijbasis, because they're not interested in anything other than Krishna. Not by rejection, but by absorption. So anything that they contact, religiously or otherwise, is one thing. So this whole topic, this evening's discussion, Jiva Goswami's commentary, is some people don't understand the exalted nature of Krishna, and therefore they don't understand the exalted nature of the Brijbasis, but they are eternal associates, even though they may take birth, and they may have families, and they may have this and that, paraphernalia and cows and occupation and apparently worldly things, but they're not. There's no worldliness. What to speak of enjoyment, there's not even tribulation. Material kind of tribulation. It's just varieties of ecstasy. And that's what scriptural teaching is. And there, you know, these references say it again and again and again. So we're not there, but we can hold them up there, you know, as like that's the standard to aim for and mold our lives. Just by hearing about them, it inspires cleansing and attachment. Cleansing from the material contamination, or using Prabhupada's words, material contact. And think of the material contact in a different way. Opportunity for service to Krishna, contact. That's how to view. We accept things that come our way as arrangements of Krishna for our necessities. And whatever is beyond our necessities, with those that are necessities, it's offered to Krishna. That's this Gona Dharma that we talked about this morning. And anything beyond that is, it's Krishna's paraphernalia, how to use it in his service. As bhakti matures, that's what one's life looks like and feels like. Just like that, going back, and one last thing. This Prahlad Maharaj, we know from his childhood and his prayers, he had absolutely no material attachment. He had no fear. There wasn't anything about his life that was material, and yet he later became a king, and he had a queen, and he had family. So that was one of the references. And no more than Prahlad was attached than the Brijbasis are attached. Although they have their material things that are they're in contact with. Referring to the verse, Etasmin, of this world, but no material allurement, nor material suffering. Okay, so let's see if there's some discussion. Bhagavat Katha. You have something? Just a personal question, right?
Yes.
Okay. This is the Gaudiya Vaishnava understanding. And it's, I haven't read it, but it's, I've been informed. It's in Baladev Vidyabhusan's commentary on Vedanta Sutra, where with scriptural reference he makes the declaration, Lakshmi is expansion of Radharani. Now, as the expansion, one can say the same. Or non-different. And one can also say different. One is the source and the other is the expansion of the source. There's other details, you know, but leaving those other details because it's detailed. Well, let me take that response a little further. Because one of the challenges, Baladev was writing his commentary on Vedanta Sutra because there was a challenge by the Ramanadis, the worshippers of Lord Ramachandra, the northern version of Ramanujacharya's followers. Whoever heard of Radharani being worshipped with Krishna? There's no marriage. So it's got to be Satyabhama Krishna or Rukmini Krishna, but why Radha Krishna? Whoever heard this? Where is this in scripture? Show us. There was the challenge. And they would say it should be, you know, other than Radha. And we should do the worship because we have the right Siddhanta. So he had to address that. And that's one of the ways he addressed it. Just as Narayana is an expansion of Krishna. Now they didn't have to accept that Narayana is an expansion of Krishna, because they have it the other way around. But there has to, you know, from the strict point of view, there has to be Siddhanta that supports what you're doing. And the Siddhanta stems from Vedanta Sutra and then scripture that explains it in a consistent doctrine or vada that covers, you know, the whole Vedanta Sutra. So that's where it comes in Vedanta Sutra. As Narayana is an expansion of Krishna, Lakshmi is an expansion of Radha. So it's perfectly appropriate, Radha Krishna, Swayam Bhagavan and his spiritual count, his Shakti. They're worshipped together. Speak right into the microphone. Somehow the sound isn't coming. There we go. Okay. Yes, exactly. All of them. And that's in the 10th canto commentary of Rasa Dance, Jiva Goswami beats that drum hundreds of times. They are his potency. It's not illicit. A man and another man's wife, that's illicit. This is Krishna and Krishna's own potency. There's nothing illicit. All of the gopis are expansions of Radha, and she is his internal potency. There's nothing illicit. So the prohibition for a worldly person doesn't apply because it's his own potency. It just doesn't apply. There are goddesses, there are expansions of him, of Radha. Big difference. Just a, you know, spiritual and material distinction. Night and day difference. Okay?
So this was the Gopas, they didn't feel any material tribulation because they were fully, completely absorbed in Krishna, attached to Krishna. So is it the right understanding that to the extent that we are attached to Krishna, to that extent we don't feel that tribulation?
It's proportionate to. And the emphasis goes to their attachment was intense. It's not like they didn't, if they stubbed their toe, they didn't feel it. That's not what it means.
So, like in my situation, like, don't have that much attachment. So, is it appropriate, is it okay to pray to Krishna to remove certain
Remove the material tribulation? What's appropriate is Queen Kunti's prayer. Relieve the material portion, leaving the spiritual portion. I mean, you can say it implicit. She doesn't say it explicitly, but it's implied. Please remove the material portion of my attachment, the Pandavas and the Vrishnis. It leaves the spiritual attachment, the spiritual portion. Now, she wasn't materially attached, but she was speaking as if she was. because she was feeling torn between her sons and her father's family. The older generation, the younger generation, torn between. So that's in her case. So the principle applies. Is it appropriate to ask for take away the material tribulation, the material portion of our tribulation? Because then it's no longer a material tribulation. It's spiritual tribulation. We're not impersonalists. We're not monists. We're not, want to become numb. That's not bliss. That's numb. I don't have the answer to that. At what point in time did he compose these prayers? That's your question. They were composed. The only thing we know chronologically is when he became well acquainted with the ocean of truth. That's one statement. And when he came to know of his spiritual identity in the beginning stage. I mean, his spiritual Swarup, his rasa with Krishna, as a maidservant in the beginning stages of that, which means there's stages. And then he had all these realizations. So that's the only chronology. And how it was composed, we don't know. Somehow somebody recorded it. Maybe so many maybes. Maybe he spoke it again and again and again, and then somebody repeated it again and again, and somewhere somebody wrote it down. But we don't know. Anything? Okay. We're going to take your mask off for just a moment.
This is kind of a continuation of Muhammad Guru's question. If Brahma composed, if Brahma is Samhita, how is he bewildered, or how is, how did he, when he hid away the coward voice, why did that happen?
Okay, I got it. There's a couple of ways of looking at it. One way is looking at it as Arjuna became bewildered, so Brahma became bewildered. That is, Krishna induced it so that the whole exchange could take place. And another is 9:30 Bhagavad Gita. He was an Ananya Bhakta, an undivided devotee, but somehow Durachar overwhelmed him. And so how did Durachar overwhelm him? Well, Krishna's arrangement, we could say it like that. Another way is because he was so astounded by Braja, which is shown in his prayers. I mean, as we understand it, periodically, or even more than periodically, regularly, the denizens of heaven come to view Krishna's pastimes. So, we don't know how often Brahma was there viewing Krishna's pastimes, but the particular pastime that comes in that chapter 12, is he was just awestruck by the intensity of everybody and everything, because that's in his prayers. It's not just the cowherd boys and the very unique relationship they have with him. In his prayers, which comes in chapter 14, it's all the Vrijbasis. It seems that he was overwhelmed by the intensity of their love to the point where, A, he became bewildered, and on the other side of that bewilderment, he wanted to take birth as a, you know, not yet, Brahma knowing enough to build the universe, wants to take birth as a blade of grass. So it means he was overwhelmed with the awesomeness of the residents of Vrindavan. So when one becomes overwhelmed like that, one can do silly things. Like he lost his mind. Do we have any online?
Yes, there's one question online and I also have.
Okay.
The online question is from Arjuna Vaidya. Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, how does spiritual attachment for children and family...
How does spiritual attachment for
children
and family... At the beginning level of sadhana. Well, we don't have attachment at the beginning level of sadhana. We have, you know, a little bit and mostly the other. It's mixed. So it doesn't look like in the beginning stages of sadhana. But it's, you know, it's the dedication. This is this Gonadharma topic again. To the degree that the mind can be absorbed in meditation upon Krishna. That's what the text 61 purport says repeatedly. Absorption proportionate to one's absorption in meditation upon Krishna. So that's what we're doing. It looks like what we're doing right now. You know, we're hearing topics of Krishna and we, you know, chanting our rounds and cooking for Krishna and this thing and that thing and the other thing for Krishna. That's what it looks like. It's mixed. That's what it looks like. But we're, you know, to the degree that we're striving to hear with eagerness and attentiveness and trying to understand, etc., then the remembrance of Krishna will awaken. Not remembrance like memorization kind of remembrance, but consciousness reawakening kind of remembrance. Or the bhakti dimension grows. That's where the remembrance grows. And then, you know, the material affinity portion subsides, the material affinity grows. That's a reply to the question. It's gradual. You have something? Or is there like what? Is it academic or realized? That's what your question is? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, I mean, the commentary is like, we just like different acharyas, so is it like, I don't know, I was just thinking, is there the realization when they just read that word, that Srimad Bhagavatam, that word, so is it their realization?
I'm trying to understand what the alternatives are. Realization over here, and what's over here? Just academic scholarship?
Yeah.
Like that?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, they do both. You know, they'll refer, for example, they'll refer to dictionary definition of this word can also mean this. it can also mean that, and if it means this, then this will be the understanding, and if it's that, and that's the understanding, that's scholarship. And there's realization. I mean, down to detail, like the one of the ones that we heard is dust on the garland of Krishna as he's coming back. Now, there isn't anything in the verse that says the cowherd boys were wiping the limbs of Krishna with their cloth for the dust, so it doesn't speak of the dust. Then there's another one that says, how, you know, Krishna hasn't even come out of the forest yet. How can they don't have a microscope or you know, high-powered telescope, that can see dust on the garland. It's because they're present with Krishna, even though he's distant. By that spiritual, like Vyasa, like Sanjaya can see the pastimes that are taking place. So they have that capacity. So how do these acharyas know that? It's not speculation and it's not scholarship. But they're not making, you know, okay, this part is scholarship and that part is my realization. And then another is there's variegatedness in what the acharyas say. My understanding of that, what that is it's realization, and they're experiencing the pastime in a different way. Because Krishna's pastimes are literally unlimited besides eternal. You know, what's an eternal pastime? And what's an unlimited pastime? Everything we know is time-bound and limited. So they're experiencing. It's their direct realization. And they're applying the principle of scholarship also. Because that's what acharyas are supposed to be doing. They do what they're supposed to be doing. But they're not bound by scholarship, or they can go beyond the boundaries of scholarship into the realm of realization and express that too. Well, and I'm wowed by the fact that here they are experiencing Krishna's pastimes and doing a time out and sharing it with us. Because they could just stay with Krishna's pastimes in Hari Bol. See you guys later. But they're very compassionate. Takes time to write, to do anything. You know, it's like what you were describing. We were talking in the car, taking the time to distribute prasadam. You know, you could just be reading your Bhagavatam. You don't have to go and distribute prasadam. So it takes time to do that. It takes time to give Krishna bhakti to other people at whatever level they can take it. But, you know, that's our acharyas. There's a really nice in the Gopi Gita section. What's the verse? We're just discussing it many times in relation to Bhakti Chumash because he sang that song. But it's, anyway, in the Gopi Gita section, tavakatamritam tapta jivanam. There we go. Katamritam, tava, katamritam. Tava is your pronoun, your. Katamritam, the description of your form and your activities. Tapta jivanam. It gives relief to the sufferings, tapta jivanam, of all living entities. And so here's the gopis. They're in rasa dance with Krishna, speaking about all living entities who are the tapta jivanam people. So and they want to give that to them, so that that's right in the verse. So even exalted gopis, they're not going out on sankirtan or something, but you know, that's their mood. And that's the mood of Lord Chaitanya, the mood of Lord Chaitanya's followers. So it's just part of the mood of the gopis. That's what our acharyas are in. And they're wanting to give because they know what the result of it is. It's not only sweetness, but it relieves all the miseries of material, all the miseries of material existence. Like, now there's still birth, death, the misery, the sufferings are there because we have bodies and minds, so we suffer. But it can lift one beyond it. That's why we're doing what we're doing. Following our acharyas. So you had something else?
There are more questions on the
chat. That happens when we talk more over here, they get more over there.
So, one of the questions is, my absorption and meditation is my service. Is that enough for me advancement?
Yeah. Well, and we give to others, the absorption, and we give to others.
And one more question from Eli Kurikova. I'm Hare Krishna Maharaj. How should I explain my kids, 11 and 13 years? At school, their learning science / Darwin theory is the basis of human birth.
That's a big topic. And I recently heard that question asked of Rabindra Swarup Prabhu during the Festival of the Holy Name. And he said, I haven't been, you know, my children are all grown up. I think you're best getting advice from people who have children of that age, because the time is a little different than when my children were growing up. It's a good, you know, he kept saying, that's a good question, that's a good question, that's a good question. Did you see that portion of the, did you see that portion of the Festival of Holy Name, Rabindra Swarup Prabhu's talk on Shikshastaka? And he's asked that question. No, you don't have to read it again. He's asked a similar question. How do you explain these, you know, Krishna conscious ABCs to a 12 to 13 year old? Amara was asking that from Chicago. So I'm just repeating. The question itself is not something that's going to be easy for me to answer during the evening class. But I would say get together with others who have children of similar age, learn from them what they're doing. I mean, it's the principle is become familiar with what it is that they're hearing, become familiar with the Vedic explanation, and don't just poo-poo and trash what they're hearing. Recognize they're hearing it, and you come to the point where you can understand it. Don't just trash science, but see, here's the Vedic alternative, and here's some holes in that bucket. And a person who really understands this, get the name of, because I don't want to say it online right now, because then this person will get bombarded. But you send me the person who's asking this question, I'll send an individual who can guide them. He really knows how to do it nicely. Okay? You gotta talk into the microphone.
Yes, one more question from Sanchari Dasi. We are trained to go beyond desire for liberation. Yet, we are also taught to yearn for entrance into spiritual world.
Yes.
How do we understand the seeming paradox?
Easy. you listen to Prabhupada's lectures and it becomes easy. In the beginning, Prabhupada's teaching is, in the beginning stage, it's good to desire to be with Krishna. And in the stage that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu describes, you can do with me whatever you like. In Shikshastaka, you can embrace me, you can neglect me, you can trample me under your feet, you can do with me whatever you like. Just keep me engaged in your service. So for us to want to be in Krishna's association, that's good. Your question. Yes. It's subjective, and as time moves everything, that line also moves. So it's not static. With the line of where you the principle behind what you draw the line, besides it's, customized, and it's also time moves that where that line is. A very simple principle is that which you can remain steady at. So for example, supposing someone by nature doesn't have so many needs. So their standard is different than another person. And then that person is different than another person. So where you draw the line is, you can be very peaceful and be steady in your activities. Always looking, how can I simplify and streamline? And that may, over a period of time, change. But don't be artificial. It's another way of saying where you can be steady. Don't go artificial in the abnegation side. I can be steady. And then it's kind of like going increasing your chanting from 2 rounds to 4 rounds to whatever it is, however people. So, but do something that's steady. That's how many you should do. You can do some more, but don't go below a certain standard. So same with this, where the line goes. So you can be steady. Don't artificially go that way or artificially that way. The principle is be steady in what you're doing, what you're accepting. And you're always looking to simplify. Do I really need this? And at a certain point it just falls away because you don't really need it.
But at the same time, there's this fear about the future. And
but Rupa,
lack of faith in Krishna.
Okay. So then that's part of what you have to factor in. Rupa Goswami gave some standard. There's something you set aside for emergency. But so how much? He gave a percentage. But supposing for one person, I'm fine. Another person, they're not fine. So that which you can maintain. Steadiness. If there's no limit to how much, the uncertainty factor means I have to accumulate, that's unwholesome. So you try to leverage it the other direction. But steady is that's the key.
Where to engage us?
Speak into the microphone.
Okay,
The discretionary resource that you're asking? Set a standard. Supposing, you know, you're going to have to make arrangements for your son's education, higher education. So you set aside something. And, you know, just follow a principle. You know how to budget, so you make some, and you do that. And you may want to have a little discretionary amount just in case something. But, you know, don't let it just become unlimited. And you just draw a line. And you tighten your belt and that's it. Because otherwise, it's like scratching an itch. It doesn't make the itch go away. It just becomes more irritated and bloody. That's, you know, passion burns. And, you know, so I understand the question. There's uncertainty. And that my faith isn't, although Krishna is certain, my faith isn't as strong as it could be that Krishna is going to be my protector. So for someone that has that spirit, that Krishna is my protector, they can remain steady, and that their line is different for them than for another person. But always be looking to diminish, not increase. And it's a matter of faith and a matter of your relationship with Krishna. Even those that have a relationship, just like Rupa and Sanatan, and that emergency fund they used, got Sanatan Goswami out of jail. It was good that he did it. It was not because of lack of, you know, the reliance on Krishna, just give it all away. It was there for a purpose and it was used for that purpose. Not for something else. Yeah, realistic. There are emergencies. And where's the line? That's your question. It depends on your, you know, faith, and another way of saying it depends on how you can be steady. Be realistic. If I continue over accumulating, bhakti is destroyed. And if I just turn the other direction, I'm going to be in constant anxiety. I'm not going to be mindful of Krishna. I'm going to be something else, resentful or fearful or something. So, okay, that's enough on that topic. Last chance.
This question is about over-endeavoring.
Over-endeavoring.
I understand the principle is that you need to stop when it starts affecting your sadhana. But at times the attraction is way too high.
Personally, you're speaking. The attraction is?
It's pretty high for whatever I'm seeking, the passion. And it does burn. Still very attractive.
Attractive. Not attractive, compelling.
It's very compelling, yeah.
That's not attractive at all.
So what do I do in this kind of
scenario? It's similar to his question. Not to, you know, don't be in denial of what's there, and don't feed it unlimited fuel. So where do I draw the line? That's his question. It's different context, but steady. And you're looking to reduce. Because satisfaction will come when the reliance is upon Krishna. Supposing somebody had a desire, I really want to do something wonderful for Krishna. Looks like passion. But it's not. I mean, usually it's mixed because we're mixed. But I want to do something wonderful for Krishna, serves to purify and elevate, to make some wonderful offering for Krishna. But you know, that's the, you know, the dovetail. If you're deceiving Krishna, if you're deceiving yourself, you're not going to deceive Krishna. So it's the bhakti principle is another consideration. That is, I recognize I have this thing. I have high ambitions and blah, 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 blah. Now, how can I Krishnaize that? It's certainly not going to compromise sadhana. But how do I make that? So, you have a mentor. I would say take guidance from your mentor. How do you Krishnaize that aspect of your life? And maybe you can just take a slice over here and Krishnaize that slice that's over here and see how that can be done. And if it, you know, you find that it gets Krishnaized, that's a principle that you can apply in other areas. But take guidance, because, you know, he knows you. And you know that he knows you, and he's not judging you. He'll just guide you how to... The incrementalist in me says, take something that you know out of the total somethings. Here's something that I can Krishnaize and, you know, curb it. Not unbridled. It's the mind and the modes of nature. So let me take this piece and really focus on it. And I would say, similarly, not... And even more importantly is Krishnaize your japa, because that takes care of the whole thing. That's the one stroke. Here's, as I'm speaking this, I'm remembering Prabhupada speaking at the Henry Street Temple in New York, Prabhupada singing, there's the goldsmith method and the blacksmith method. Really simple example. So the goldsmith method, he has a little hammer, tap, tap, tap. You know, into the microphone, tap, tap, tap. And the blacksmith method is they put the iron rod into the fire, make it red hot, one stroke, thud, everything finished. So, not just, you know, euphemism of one mantra at a time or something. Really do it for your 16 rounds. And, you know, the mind will go all over the place to this and that and the other thing. Maybe especially to this thing. So, you strive. Break it into small pieces if you know. So those are two suggestions. One piece of the pie of determination to achieve things and Krishnaize it. And the other is the holistic of japa. It takes enormous determination to do that. But it takes determination to do that. Or it won't happen unless there's enormous determination. Really determined, like you're determined in this other, be determined in this for 2 hours. Or whatever amount of time you spend chanting japa. Really determined. Because I want to get on the other side of this thing that's controlling my life. Or driving my, you know, the driver's seat. I'm in the back seat. Okay? Krishna. Prabhupada ki jai.